You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. It is Friday, TGI Friday, living for the weekend. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, better do, should do, can do, will do, must do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, knowing you and who you are and your perseverance and your tenacity to do whatever needs to be done, you're going to get it done. And we love you for it. Sometimes you just got to change up and just throw some stuff out there. You know what I'm saying? This is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to us live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with African posed. And
this call is being recorded.
And you can check out. You can check out the archives that are programs that are dated and titled. Other programs here on the Motherland, on the Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, from all times I'm going to give our Eastern time, so you adjust accordingly. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. on Mondays. Acres of Diamonds. Following Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Let's Buy Black 365. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, Tuesdays from 8 to 10. Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, Wednesdays from 8 to 10. On Friday, today is Friday. If the day is Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening right here on Time for an Awakening Media with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So check them out tonight, 8 p.m. Tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, that's right. It's not me. It is Sister POC with her program again, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday night, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Other programs, other things that I like to promote here on Time for an Awakening. And We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. So check them out, WeBuyBlack.com. Everything that is produced by us, sold by us, And they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, so check them out there. You can pick up laundry detergent. You can pick up toothpaste, toothbrushes, razors, chargeable batteries. Oh, man, all kinds of good stuff for you. Check them out. Check online, WeBuyBlack.com. They're going to have a convention next month, Friday the 16th, Saturday the 17th of November at the Cobb Galleria Mall here in Atlanta. So go online to get the particulars of WeBuyBlack.com. Bookstores. There are a number of bookstores because I encourage us to read, to listen, to do all the things that are necessary for us to do all the things that are necessary for us to do all we can to educate ourselves. So please do that. Read. One bookstore is Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna is here in Atlanta on Abernathy in the West End. They have books. They have artwork, artifacts, furniture, clothing at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Yeah, they do. And they have the red, black, and green NASGAS shoes. They also have the white pair, so you can check them out. And if they don't have it, they'll order it for you. Another bookstore, Medu. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall next to the food court. And, of course, there's a word that goes after Medu, and that's Netcher. Medu Netcher, which is the writing of the gods. What the Greeks call hieroglyph is called Medu Netcher. And so you can check out Medu Netcher Bookstore. Give them a call. If you go there and they don't have the book that you want, I'm quite sure they'll get it for you. They've done it for me a few times. And then my good brother and friend, Brother Ajamu, at Black Dot, the Cultural Center and Bookstore at Black Dot in Lithonia. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. He also has the NASGAS shoes there. And he also has a number of items, furniture, artwork, jewelry, and so forth. There is light in the Black Dot, so check them out, Black Dot. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics, ULU. The conference call, the ULU Thursday night call, every Thursday night, 9 p.m., go on to Blog Talk or dial this number, 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and check out Us Lifting Us as we strive to change the dynamics. Also, we've pulled our money together, and we have a cafe, Cafe ULU, located here in Atlanta at 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road. We're open Mondays from 11 to 7, Tuesdays through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we have coffee. We have Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, Brazilian, Panamanian. We have coffee. We even had, last week, we had some Papua New Guinea, which was a really pretty strong coffee. We also have loose teas that are pretty. Everything that we have at Cafe ULU is produced by us. It's produced by, we have some potato chips. Symphony Potato Chips is a brother and his two daughters, based on a recipe from his father, who was a chef. I mean, we have the wraps. We also have drinks. And one drink we definitely promote is Ambrosia, Brother Novak Young, and his drink. It's a vitality drink that has alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic sugar cane, and chlorophyll, the original. The bite, the cinnamon, the gold, the green, all of these drinks are, and all of the benefits that it derives. So check out Brother Novak Ambrosia. If you want to inquire about more, you want to order some, call him at 678-508-7254, 678-508-7254. And you can go online to Complete Beauty One, Complete One Beauty, CompleteOneBeauty.com. Check out my good brother, Brother Bomani Tayembe wants to take brothers and sisters to the motherland next month, the 16th through the 26th. There is some room still available. If you want to check it out, you can give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. It's going to go to Accra. It's going to go to Ghana, West Africa. We're arriving in Accra, the capital city, 3 days in Accra, then 3 days in Kumasi. That's where they make that's where the Ashanti King is, and they make all the good artwork in Ashanti in Kumasi, and then 3 days in Cape Coast, where the dungeons are, where my good sister and friend Amakus, and One Africa, in Cape Coast. So check it out. If you want to check out what he has done, go to his website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see photos from previous tours, particularly the last tour that happened in May of this year, Facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I. If you want to check out video of previous tours, YouTube.com/Bomani2007. YouTube.com/Bomani2007. You can check it out for yourself. Tomorrow, Anthony Broder will be in town. Anthony Broder and his lovely daughter, Atlantis Broder, along with Sister Gina Page, who's with AfricanAncestry.com. Gina Page, AfricanAncestry.com. This is part of the Asa Hilliard, Asa Restoration Project. This is a fundraiser. They've been doing restoring and restoration in Kemet. It is tomorrow from 6 to 9 at the Clark Atlanta University, Woodruff Library, 111 James P. Brawley. The cost is $30 general admission and $20 for children, students, and us seniors. Check out Anthony Broder, the Broder File from Nile Valley Contributions. This brother has done tremendous work in the spirit of our solid African ancestors. So check that out. So my brothers and sisters, I hope everything is well with you this day. We're going to have some discussion about couple of things. Number one I'm going to talk about right now is I'm going to talk about climate change. I'm trying to figure out some things. I'm going to talk about climate change. And then later, after the break, we're going to talk about Kanye mess. That's what Michael Eric Dyson said. He ain't Conway West. He's Kanye mess. And we're going to talk about it in the context of our struggle and what's happening. And not because this is not Kanye West. There's a number of our people whose minds are so messed up and who really believe that this system and this president. That's the other part. I mean, I understand about the idea of the American system and all of its trappings. I understand that. But when you have a man like that dude, as dysfunctional, as arrogant as he is, as narcissistic as he is, as ignorant as he is, and he becomes the norm. That's why the situation with Kanye West is the norm. That's why all the other things that have been surfacing about that is the norm. So we're going to talk about climate change right now. And, I did a program many years ago when I first started doing my radio programs. It's been 4 years now. 4 years, almost around the same time that I moved here to Atlanta. I started it in Milwaukee, and then when I got here to Atlanta, I resumed, and I was trying to do it over a number of venues. Motherland Media is what we started calling ourselves, and then my good friend, who's an ancestor, Sister Queen Ifama, Sister Ifama. She got us into Blog Talk. So then we were at Blog Talk for a few years. And then my good brother Ralph out of Philadelphia turned me on to Brother Elliot out of Philadelphia, who has a radio program, Time for an Awakening. And so now I've been on Time for an Awakening now for about a year and a half, and I really enjoy it. I love the other programs that are on Time for an Awakening, and I'm quite sure Dr. Rogers feels good about being on this venue, more access and so forth. We had Ulu with us, but us lifting us, and somehow we had some technical problems, and they went back to Blog Talk. That's understandable, you know. But, you know, I was talking about the climate change because what happened was...
Could you cut out
this? Oh, sorry.
No.
I got to turn this off.
Climate change is happening, and that's cool.
Okay. Sorry about that. I got to cue it. But, I read an article when I was sitting in the firehouse. I read an article about maybe about 80s. So we can easily say well over 20 years ago, probably even longer than that, talking about global warming. And, of course, they changed it to climate change. And they were saying then what they're saying now, but they're more emphatic now because the reality is starting to hit home to many people. But they were saying is that if we don't change the emissions and the deforestation and all these things that are happening on the planet, this planet will experience what they call climate change. And there'll be acid rain. There'll be all kinds of things that are going to be happening, catastrophic things that are going to be happening. And then I took that article to heart. I was like, man, yeah, I can understand that. I can see that. But you can really see it today. You can really see it by the extremes. Because, see, when they talked about global warming, many people thought that it would just start being warmer and warmer. They didn't understand that what it really meant was extreme weather patterns, extreme cold, extreme hot, more vicious tornadoes and hurricanes and torrential rains and so forth. They didn't understand it, the drought and dryness to the point that many of the fires that happen will be burning for days. And so when that happened, many people didn't deal with it. When Jimmy Carter was president on his way out, he had put up solar panels on the White House. When Ronald Reagan became president, one of the first things he did was took those solar panels down. And if you ever heard this program, you know that I'd always say that Ronald Reagan was one of the worst presidents this country ever had, particularly as it relates to economics, because he's the one that has caused this huge income or economic disparity, income inequality that you see in the world today, not just here in America, but in the world today. Him and Margaret Thatcher. And now it's Trump and what's her name? Her name will come to me. Who's the prime minister of England. You know, maybe it might come to me, but you know, I don't care a damn if it don't. But those two. And so Ronald Reagan opened up exploration for more oil and so forth. And it is, and then they tried to do something about it in subsequent presidents, Bush, Clinton, younger Bush and so forth. And then, of course, Obama. But then now that when Trump came in, he opened it up big time, talking about clean coal and the arrogance and the ignorance of Trump is just so, I mean, if it didn't have such devastating impact, it would truly be laughable. Because it ain't funny. It would truly be laughable. But he, like you talk about, yeah, they're just going to clean the coal before it is burned so the emissions won't be. Fracking. I mean, all of this, all of these things that the scientists said 30 some years ago and said, don't do this. If you know that the wind and solar industry was bought out by coal, bought out by big oil. They bought them out to suppress them. Now, of course, you see now across the world, they recognize the importance of renewable energy. Oh, somebody texted me and said Angela Merkel. Oh, no, Angela Merkel. She's with Germany. I'm talking about the chick from the UK. Yeah, Angela Merkel's from Germany. It'll come to me. May. Last name is May. And she is, along with Trump, in fact, that they're part of the reason why they're getting out of the European Union so they could be more independent, to have the overall dictates that may be beneficial for the union itself. And so this mindset of America first, Britain first, and all this bull, you know. But this global situation has been exacerbated in the last few years by Trump and the greedy and selfishness of this country and the world. They were saying that more and more vehicles are on the streets using fuel. I mean, you remember they said, well, we need to get this lead out of gas because they added lead to gas. They added it. And because it'll burn cleaner and because they recognize, particularly looking at Chicago, looking at the projects like the Robert Taylor homes, which is very visible right off the Dan Ryan, I-94, you know, the Dan Ryan going into from downtown from, or as they say, the loop. And they said they're looking at problems that young people experience because of this leaded gas. And of course, causing defects, causing learning disabilities and so forth. So they said, we got to get lead out of gas. And of course, you know, they charged you more for not adding something. We're not going to add it like we used to add it. But now that we're not going to add it, we're going to charge you more because we didn't add it. You know, but yet it just wasn't the lead. It was the gas itself. It was the emissions itself that were causing the problems. And so we got to develop ways. So they said, we got to develop ways to curtail this, to be cleaner. And so, you know, they're talking about, not in this administration, because they're still talking about oil. In fact, Rex Tillerson, who was the Secretary of State, whose only job he ever had was ExxonMobil. And at the time, and I think it's still there, there was half a trillion dollar exploration with Russia on the table. $500 billion dealing with oil. That's why he was the Secretary of State. He wasn't qualified. Oh, yeah, he's gone to other countries, particularly Saudi Arabia and other countries, dealing with the issue of oil. But he had no real expertise dealing with other countries and so forth. And nor does Pompeo. In fact, to me, you know, Trump's talking about the best and the brightest. This was the most dysfunctional group of cabinet members ever. Shysters. I mean, people that he put in with the design to ruin those or to eliminate them. the education secretary, the only American, African, or Negro cabinet member, HUD. Dr. Ben Carson, what a joke. So, you know, it is more disastrous because the deniers are still there. I just seen something on the internet again talking about, you know, the falsehoods of climate change. I mean, damn, what do you have? Can you see that from times 20, 30 years ago, if you can think and remember, were there hurricanes like this? Were there? Oh, yeah, they're periodically, but not continuously. Were there droughts like this? Were there tornadoes? No, because the climate is messed up. And it's messed up because of Western civilization, capitalism, greed. That's why it's messed up. China and the billion people they have, India and the billion people they have, and everybody wants to drive and the emissions and so forth. I mean, I'm telling you that when the world went to the Paris Accord some years ago, and of course the United States backed out of them, when nations agreed that we're going to have to find ways to curtail what we're doing. Let me play this particular piece here and then read to you from an article from Science and Environment from the BBC. BBC. So, apologize. A lot of times the technology that happens here doesn't go well. So just, I'm going to be patient here for a second. I appreciate your diligence and patience. So, and I lost it. This is not the first time these things have happened to me, y'all. This is not the first day. This is not the first time. So I'm trying. And oh man. So oh well. I'll have to find it. But yeah. Man. Let me do this. I want to find this. I got another article, though, that dealing with climate change. And because it is a serious issue that we definitely need to deal with. And because it just doesn't affect. It affects the planet. It affects the whole planet. You know, it's going to affect the whole planet from the possibilities of shorelines, cities on the shorelines being underwater, islands that will be underwater. Check this one out. When the permafrost, after things have been frozen for so many years, they start to thaw. What viruses, what other stuff that they could be releasing into the air? We don't know. You know, we don't know. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a break so I can find this particular piece because I really liked how it was presented. But when I guess because I was off the computer for so long, when I hit it, it just didn't want to act right. You know, that's how it goes sometimes. So we're going to take a break. And then we're going to be right back. So You stay right here with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I hope I have my technical problems worked out here. We'll give it our best shot here. This is a piece from the BBC. Final call to save the world from climate catastrophe.
Causing problems which are only set to get worse. Rising sea levels, extinction of species, homes and habitats destroyed by flooding, loss of land, famine and drought. The planet is around 1 degree Celsius warmer than it was 160 years ago. Now that might not sound like a lot, but actually that warming is having a big effect on the world around us. And scientists are saying that if we can keep global temperatures from rising by no more than half a degree more by the end of the century, then it's going to be better for us, for the planet, and everything on it. So why is that exactly? Ice sheets and glaciers are already melting. Sea levels are rising, and that means flooding. Low-lying areas such as islands in the Pacific are at risk of disappearing entirely, and many cities like these could disappear beneath seawater. Here's the thing, though. Current research shows that we're due to sail past this 1.5 degree mark, this crucial time, within the next 12 years. By the end of the century, the planet will have warmed by more than twice that amount. If we take steps to reduce global warming to 1.5 degrees, these things will still happen, yes, but the situation won't be nearly so bad. Sea levels will still rise, but not as much as if the world was hotter. Millions more people will avoid having their homes flooded. The number of people who'd experience a lack of water would be halved. Half the world's animals and plant species would be able to keep large parts of their habitats that they would otherwise lose. Scientists say that if we are going to stop the situation from getting any worse, if we are going to preserve the world as best we can and keep to this limit of 1.5 degrees, the world needs to stop doing so much of this. And it needs to do a lot more of this. Half our energy by 2050 will need to come from renewable sources. Even then, we'll have to plant millions of trees to soak up carbon dioxide and use machines like these to suck carbon from the air. The task is extremely urgent, and it's something that scientists all agree on. How much of this gets done, though? Well, that's up to you and the governments that run countries around the world.
And I don't know, dear brothers and sisters, but it looks like, to me, the way it's going, they're not going to change. They're not going to change. The article, Final Call to Save the World, from the BBC, Save the World from Climate Catastrophe, is written by Matt McGrath. It's the final call, says scientists, the most extensive warning yet on the risk of rising global temperatures. Their dramatic report on keeping that rise under 1.5 degrees Celsius says the world is now completely off track, heading instead towards 3 degrees Celsius. Keeping to the preferred target 1.5 above pre-industrial levels means rapid, far-reaching, and unprecedented changes in all aspects. All aspects of society. It would be a hugely expensive, but the window of opportunity remains open. It will be hugely expensive, but the window of opportunity remains open. After 3 years of research and a week of haggling between scientists and government officials at a meeting in South Korea, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has issued a special report on the impact of global warming at the 1.5 Celsius. What could be wiped out by temperature rise? And of course, what is climate change? The critical 33-page summary for policymakers certainly bears the hallmarks of difficult negotiations between climate researchers determined to stick with what their studies have shown and political representatives more concerned with economies and living standards. Despite the inevitable compromises, there are some key messages that come through loud and clear. The first is that limiting to 1.5 brings a lot of benefits compared with limiting it to 2 degrees. It really reduces the impact of climate change in very important ways, says Professor Seiki, who is the co-chair of the IPCC, which, of course, once again, is the impact on global warming and the international policy committees. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The second is unprecedented nature of the changes that are required if we are to limit warming to 1.5 Celsius. Changes to energy systems, changes that to the way we manage land, changes to the way we move around with transportation. You know, risks for natural and managed and human systems, impact of average global temperatures above the pre-industrial ages. That means the ice caps, the Arctic will have problems. Fisheries will have issues. Coral reefs are dying. Tourism issues. Scientists might want to write in capital letters, "Act now, idiots." But they need to say that with facts and numbers, says Krishna Kushan of Greenpeace, who was an observer at the negotiations, and they have. The researchers have used these facts and numbers to paint a picture of world with a dangerous fever caused by humans. We used to think that we could keep warming below 2 degrees this century, and then the changes we would experience would be manageable. Not anymore. The new study says that going past the 1.5 is dicey, with a planet's inevitability, and the 1.5 temperatures guardrail could be exceeded in just 12 years, in 2030. In 2030, 12 years from now. We can stay below, but it will require urgent, large-scale changes from governments and individuals, and we'll have to invest a massive pile of cash every year, or about 2.5% of global gross domestic product, the value of all goods and services produced for 2 decades. Even then, we'll still need machines, trees, and plants to capture carbon dioxide from the air that we can then store deep underground forever. The report says that there must be a rapid and significant change in 4 big global systems: energy, land use, cities, and industry. Energy, changing from the systems we have now to renewable, clean systems, i.e. wind and solar. See, wind and solar, the wind is there. It's free. All you put up a damn windmill and we have the damn thing turning and you generate electricity. But no, see, it's all about money. The sun, solar. The sun is there. Put up some panels. Capture the sun and energy and store it for heating and cooling. It's there. Put them on a car. So instead of electricity or use electric car, instead of gasoline, which emits carbon, you have a car that can run and store the energy in a battery so it can continue to run at night. It's all there. It's all possible. Land use, the fact that we need better land usage. We need better land usage, better land management globally, beating back droughts, planting trees. Trees are what help with the end of carbon dioxide. You're planting trees everywhere, and obviously in the southwest of this country because of fires, because of drought. And the reason why they're having it is because of the climate change that we are experiencing. Cities. These massive cities and the energies that they use. Maybe in the cities there could be more carpooling, not a lot of less cars and using different types of transportation. The industries. So, I mean, these things can be changed. But it adds up that the world cannot meet its target without changes by individuals, urging people to buy less meat, buy less dairy, or more locally seasonal foods, throw less stuff away, drive electric cars, but walk or cycle to short distances, take trains and buses instead of planes, using video conferencing instead of business travel, using a washing line instead of a tumble dryer, hanging your stuff out on a line. Remember that? I haven't seen that in decades. Insulate homes. Demand low carbon in every consumer product. Life changes can make a big difference, says Dr. Deborah Roberts, She's one of the co-chairs of the Intergenerational Project for Climate Concerns. That's a very empowering message for individuals. This, she said, this is not about remote science. It's about where we live and work. It gives us a cue on how we might be able to contribute to this massive change, because everyone is going to have to be involved. You might say you don't have control over land use, but you do have control over what you eat, and that determines land use. We can choose the way we move in cities, and we don't have, and if we don't have access to public transportation, make sure you are electing politicians who provide options around public transportation. The hottest that this location has ever been in parts of the world is showing this diagram showing that how hot it's across the planet, you know, showing how hot it is. Five steps to get to the 1.5. Global emissions of carbon dioxide need to be declined by 45% from 2010 levels to by 2030. Renewables are estimated to provide up to 85% of global electricity by 2050. Coal is expected to be reduced to zero. No damn clean coal. Coal, zero. Up to 7 million square kilometers of land will be needed for emergency crops, a bit less than the size of Australia. Global net zero emissions by 2050. What that means is that all of the cars and so forth and factories and industry will be, their emissions will be zero. They're not putting out carbon dioxide. How much will it cost? It won't be cheap. The report says to limit warming to 1.5 Celsius will involve annual average investments needed in the energy system of around $2.4 trillion between 2016, which is a couple years ago, and 2035. Experts believe the number needs to be put into context. There are costs and benefits you have to weigh, says Dr. Stephen Cornelius, a former UK negotiator and now with the World Wildlife Federation. He says making big emissions cuts in the short term will cost money, but the cheaper than paying for carbon dioxide removal later this century. The report also talks about the benefits as there is a higher economic growth at 1.5 degrees Celsius than it would be at 2 degrees Celsius. And you don't have the higher risk of catastrophic impact at 1.5 than you do at 2. Five things we have learned from the report and looking at some comparisons. And now, what happens if there is no action? The researchers say that if we fail to keep temperatures rises below 1.5, we are in for some significant and dangerous changes to the planet. You can kiss coral reefs goodbye, and they are dying already. As the report says, they will be essentially 100% wiped out at 2 degrees of warming. Global sea levels will rise about 10 centimeters, about 4 inches more if we let warming go to 2.2 degrees Celsius. That may not sound like much, but keeping to 1.5 means that 10 million fewer people will be exposed to the risk of flooding. Cities like New York, port cities, Miami, New Orleans, all these places that are right on the oceans. And of course, in other parts of the world. There is also significant impact on ocean temperatures and acidity and the ability to grow crops such as rice, maize, and wheat. We are already in a danger zone at 1 degree of warming. Both poles are melting at an accelerated rate. Ancient trees that have been there for hundreds of years are suddenly dying. And the summer we've just experienced, basically the whole world was on fire. They're melting. They've seen it. And I just mentioned to you about the permafrost. Some of these things have been frozen for millennials. And now that they don't know what kind of gases that once they, you know, it's, you don't know. Is this plan at all feasible? The countdown to the worst of global warming seems to have accelerated. Seriously damaging impacts are no longer on a distant horizon later this century, but within the time frame that appears uncomfortably close. By the same token, the report's pathway for keeping a lid on the temperatures all mean that hard decisions cannot be delayed. A shift away from fossil fuels by the mid-centuries has to be done completely. They cannot be using the gasoline that is happening right now. They can't. Coal phased out far sooner than previously suggested. I mean, do it as soon as possible. And see, I think the real deal is if the people on this planet were serious about human beings on this planet, as opposed to the elite, the oligarchy, the plutocracy, those one percenters. See, I believe the one percenters don't give a damn. They'll continue to get money, and they're going to build an area where they'll all be with a big bubble over it. You know what I'm saying? Like in those futuristic movies. They'll live there, and everybody else will be dying outside of there, exposed. Really? Coal phased out far sooner than previously suggested. Vast tracts of land giving over to forests, to trees. It's mind bending stuff, and some will say it's hopelessly unrealistic, a climate scientist fantasy. So is any of it plausible? On the one hand, the global economy relies on carbon and key activities depend on it. On the other, wind turbines and solar panels have tumbled in price, and more countries and states such as California are setting ambitious green targets. Ultimately, politicians will face a difficult choice. Persuade their voters that the revolutionary change outlined in the report is urgently needed, or ignore it and say the scientists have got it wrong. Yeah, do that. And that's what they've been saying, that global warming is not really happening. It's a myth. And they justified that by continuing as business as usual. The idea of keeping the global temperature rise to 1.5 is something very close to the hearts and minds of small island and low-lying states, which fear being inundated with flooding if temperatures go to 2 degrees. But over 3 years that the report was in preparation, more and more scientific evidence has been published showing the benefits of staying close to 1.5 are not just for island nations in the Pacific. If you save a small island country, you save the world, says Dr. Amjid Abdullah, an author of one of the studies, because the report clearly states that no one is going to be immune. It's about morality. It's about humanity. Not long at all, but the issue is now in the hands of political leaders. The report says hard decisions can no longer be kicked down the road. If the nations of the world don't act soon, they will have to rely even more on unproven technologies to take carbon out of the air, an expensive and uncertain road. They really need to start work immediately. Immediately. The report is clear that if governments just fulfill the pledges they made at the Paris Agreement for 2030, it is not good enough. It will make it difficult to consider global warming at 1.5. If they read the report and decide to increase their ambitions and act more immediately, then the 1.5 stays within reach. That's the nature of the choice they face. Campaigners and environmentalists who have welcomed the report say there is simply no time left for debate. There is no debate. There is no this or that. It is either we do it or we're going to face the dire consequences. This is the moment where we need to decide. We want to move to clean energy, sustainable lifestyles. We want to protect our forests and spaces. This is the moment that we will remember. This is the year when the turning point happened. So, that's the deal. Either we do it or we die. Dire consequences. Like I said, I did this piece when I first came on radio 4 years ago, and I read that piece 30 years ago, probably even longer. And see, I guess for me, even though I'm a Pan-Africanist and I love Africa and I love Africans, and Africa will suffer as well, no land mass on this planet will be immune. It'll affect everybody. But also, too, the future. When you have grandchildren or children and grandchildren or great, whatever, what is their future? How is it going to affect them? It's either we do it or we face the consequences, the dire consequences, the catastrophe. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Please, Mr. Groove, won't you come back home? Won't you come back? Please, won't you come back? Won't you come back? Please, won't you come back? Hey.
Thank you. probably leave us there. Hey!
Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programs here on the Time for the Awakening Media. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Right after that, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9 p.m. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 to 12 noon. And then on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., once again, it's Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Kanye mess is showing the hell is. I feel that when he lost his mother, he took a serious turn, because I was down with him when Katrina happened, they were doing that fundraising piece, and he was standing there with Mike Myers, and he went off script and he says, George Bush, you know, don't like black people, you know. Because it was George Bush and his weak response to Hurricane Katrina, and of course the devastation that it caused, and of course the brothers and sisters in New Orleans who could not evacuate and so forth. And he said, George Bush don't like black people. Man, I was right on Kanye West. But since that time, the death of his mother, and you know, I know he's from Chicago, but he's really not a friend of mine. She told me he ain't really from Chicago. He lived in Aurora, Illinois, you know, a suburb of Chicago, you know. So, but I mean, you know, people claim that, just like here in Atlanta. People say, I live in Atlanta. Probably not, you know. But me, yes, I do. I live in Atlanta. I live in the heart of the city of Atlanta, almost in the West End of Atlanta. But, you know, the city of Atlanta is small compared to metropolitan area. In fact, the city of Atlanta only has about 400 some thousand people, but the metropolitan area of the five counties that Atlanta is in, Fulton County, DeKalb County, Gwinnett, Cobb, and Clayton, close to over 4.5 million people, 4.5 million people. So, but I was down with him, but his shenanigans, and when he married that the Kardashian chick, man, that dude is just, I mean, his sanity is really questioned. In fact, one of the commentators said if his mama, you know, her mother passed, she was having some augmentations, I believe it was, some changings of here or there, and she passed. And she said right now she would be rolling over in her grave to see this fool act the way he's acting. But for those who didn't get a chance to hear it, I'm going to play a list. I'm going to play the interview, and then we can discuss it after you hear it, and you can give your African perspective.
I'm going to caution you, there's some adult language being used here. Let's listen in.
Manufacturing onshore, not even shore, into the core. It's not about the borders, the core of Adidas. And Chicago is the core of Middle America. We have to make Middle America strong. So I had the balls, because I had enough balls to put on this hat. I mean, this Adidas thing made me a billionaire. And I could have lost $200 million walking away from that deal. But even with that, I knew it was more important for me to take the chance of walking away from that deal than to have no fathers in Chicago with no homes. And when we do have prison reformation, for no, because it's habilitation, not rehabilitation, because we didn't have the abilities in the first place. We never had anyone to taught us. We didn't teach us. Exactly. We had no one to taught us. Right? So it's more important than any specific deal, anything, that we bring jobs into America and that we provide a transition with mental health in the American education curriculum that Jim has worked on. Larry Hoover also has a curriculum that he's worked on. We have Montessori curriculums that we worked on. WeWorks has a beautiful curriculum. The Waldorf establishment has a curriculum. We have meditation. There's a lot of things affecting our mental health that makes us do crazy things that puts us back into that trap door called the 13th Amendment. I did say abolish with the hat on, because why would you keep something around that's a trap door? If you're building a floor, the Constitution is the base of our industry, right? Of our country, of our company. Would you build a trap door that if you mess up and you accidentally something happens, you fall and you end up next to the Unabomber? You got to remove all that trap door out of the relationship. The four gentlemen that wrote the 13th Amendment, and I think the way the universe works is perfect. We don't have 13 floors, do we? You know, so the four gentlemen that wrote the 13th Amendment didn't look like the people they were amending. Also, at that point, it was illegal for blacks to read, or African Americans to read. And so that meant if you actually read the amendment, you'd get locked up and turned to a slave. Again, so what I think is we don't need sentences, we need pardons. We need to talk to people. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I was connected with a neuropsychologist that works with the athletes in the NBA and the NFL. And he looked at my brain. It's equal on three parts. I'm going to go ahead and drop some bombs for you. 98 percentile IQ test. I had a 75 percentile of all human beings, but it was counting eight numbers backwards off the repeat. So I'm going to work on that one. The other one's 98%. Tesla, Freud. You know, so he said that I actually wasn't bipolar. I had sleep deprivation, which could cause dementia 10 to 20 years from now, where I wouldn't even remember my son's name. So all this power that I got, and I'm taking my son to the Sox game and all that, I wouldn't be able to remember his name from a misdiagnosis. And what we need is we can empower the pharmaceuticals and make more money. That's one thing. I've never stepped into a situation where I didn't make
people more money. So we can empower pharmaceuticals, we can empower our industries, we can empower our factories, we can bring not only Adidas on shore, we could bring Foxconn to set up a factory in, I think, Minnesota, 53,000.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Yeah, Wisconsin. They have 4,000 jobs, people making $53,000 a year. And one of the things we got to set is Ford to have the highest design, the dopest cars, the most amazing. I don't really say dope. I don't say negative words and try to flip them. We just say positive, lovely, divine, universal words. So the flyest, freshest, most amazing car. And what we want to start with is I brought a gift with me right here. This right here is the iPlane 1. It's a hydrogen-powered airplane, and this is what our president should be flying in. Look at this shirt.
We're getting rid of Air Force One. Can we get rid of Air Force One? No, you don't like that.
Well, we're going to have Apple, an American company, work on this plane with. But you know what I don't like about? It's not that I don't like. What I need Saturday Night Live to improve on, or what I need the liberals to improve on, is if he don't look good, we don't look good. This is our president. He has to be the freshest, the flyest planes, the best factories, and we have to make our core be empowered. We have to bring jobs into America because our best export is entertainment and ideas. But when we make everything in China and not in America, then we're cheating on our country. And we're putting people in positions to have to do illegal things to end up in the cheapest factory ever, the prison system.
I'll tell you what, that was pretty impressive. You know, I hate to say this, Jim. Do you want to say something? What do you do after that?
You don't mind if I...
You are fed. Please, Jim, please.
We don't look good. Right.
Great, right? Isn't that a great statement? And it's so true. As a country, it's so true. Very impressive. I've never seen Jim Brown impressed before. He was impressed. That's true. That statement is amazing, huh? I want to tell you, it's great to have you guys with us. And we're going to go in. We're going to have some lunch. That was quite something. That was quite something.
That was from the soul.
It's really very interesting. Yes, yeah, please.
So you had said a president.
You know what? Can we still hear the rest of this? This is President Bush they're talking about. Can we just listen in?
I think we need to care about all people. And I believe that when I went on to NBC, I was very emotional, and I was programmed to think from a victimized mentality, a welfare mentality. I think that with blacks and African Americans, we really get caught up in the idea of racism over the idea of industry. We say if people don't have land, they settle for brands. We want Polo Sport and Obama again. We want a brand more than we want land because we haven't known how it feels to actually have our own land and have ownership of our own blocks. So when you don't have ownership, then it's all about how something looks. It's about the patina. It's not about the soil. It's not about the core. So we focus more on, is somebody wearing something? Is someone disrespecting me? So I gotta shoot them? Or the idea of someone being racist. You know, we talk about police murders, which we definitely have to discuss, and we have to bring nobility to the police officers and make the police officers are just like us. But this whole hate building, right? That's a major thing about racial tension. And we also, as black people, we have to take a responsibility for what we're doing. We kill each other more than police officers. And that's not saying that the police officer is not an issue because they are in a position of power. But sometimes they're in placement of law enforcement. They need to be law power. It's force versus power. When you shouldn't have to force people to do that. So a lot of times a police officer is sitting there, they're being forced to do this and forced to do that block, and then they force somebody into something and force something. We have to release the love throughout the entire country and give opportunities. A lot of times it's just the overall lack of reparations that we at any given point we say, oh, this is racist, this is racist, this is racist, this is racist. So we don't have the reparations, but we have the 13th Amendment. We got to open up the whole conversation. So, and that's a move, one of the moves that I love that liberals tried to do. The liberal would try to control a black person through the concept of racism because they know that we are very proud, emotional people. So when I said I like Trump to like someone that's liberal, they'll say, oh, but he's racist. You think racism can control me? Oh, that don't stop me. That's an invisible wall.
Mr. West, what
would
you like?
You have one question. We'll go through to another question.
Okay.
I answered your question. I don't answer questions in simple sound bites.
All right, we've been listening into Kanye West meeting with President Trump there, a roundabout dialogue talking about prison reform, the 13th Amendment, which, of course, granted abolished slavery in the United States. I want to bring in Caitlin Huey-Burns. Racism, a little bit of prison reform, talking about President Bush. What do you make of what we just saw?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. And it seems like that conversation went on for a little bit longer. The fact that Kanye West is in the Oval Office is not something that's entirely new for this president in terms of his relationship with him. Remember, he went to Trump Tower during the transition to meet with him. And, of course, Kim Kardashian met with Donald Trump and actually was successful in getting a commutation of a sentence for someone.
Yeah. That's really not the whole or full press conference that they had in the Oval Office with Kanye West. There's a piece, I'm quite sure you've probably seen it or heard it, where he's hugging Kanye West. There's a piece where he talks about the Let's Make America Great hat that he wanted to wear on Saturday Night Live, and that he got pushed back, and he said, "This hat makes me feel proud. This hat makes me feel like Superman. I can sort of put a cape on, make America great again." You know, my good friend, Brother Muhammad Abdullah, you know, my good friend, Muhammad Abdullah, I remember he sent out a piece, it said, you know, let's make America great. You know, grating cheese. Let's make America great again. Yeah, I tell you. Yeah. We got a caller. 646.
Hey, MC.
Hey, brother. How you doing? How you doing, Jay?
I'm good. That nigga was insane.
I think he has some serious mental health issues. You know, whatever classifications that you want to have them or describe them, bipolarism, tension deficit, whatever it is, there is no doubt that how he behaves and the things he's saying, you know, that he has some serious issues. You know, and I just like Don Lemon. From CNN said that his mother is rolling over in her grave and she heard his, you know, this press conference that he had with the president, what he had with Trump, you know. So,
but yeah, he got some serious issues, and the people that's surrounding him are not giving him any type of help whatsoever because he was rambling all over the place, and he don't know what the hell he's talking about. And nobody wants to be honest with him and tell him that this is not your lane.
Yeah,
I felt kind of sad for Jim Brown.
Me too.
But the good thing that Jim Brown had the good sense to keep his mouth shut, which was the only thing that an elder in his position was supposed to, because I guess he figured he couldn't give that dumb Negro no counsel. He couldn't guide the Negro to make cogent sentences and statements.
But
it's a real bad look.
Yeah, but I'm upset with Jim Brown because he put himself in that position, not just once. There's been many times before since Trump has been in that office. And so in that respect, because I had a lot of love for Jim Brown as seeing him play football.
I think what we're missing in a sense is that Jim Brown is looking for some kind of play in regards to the program. He's trying to get, you know, maybe some funding to continue his American program.
True which, that.
If we're going to be honest about it, his American program has been good for the community. So I'm not going to, you know, go off on Jim too much because, you know, we got to put him in the context and who and what he is at this stage of the game. He knows he's probably not going to be here too much longer, and he wants to see his program be in a position to sustain itself. Now, as far as Kanye goes, there's just, I don't know what kind of hope there is for that Negro. But the thing is, that Negro is a very wealthy Negro, which makes him even more dangerous because he has the ability to tell a lot of people to kiss his honey.
Yeah.
And that's what Negroes like him do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's quite interesting. And here it is in this day and age that we have people like that. But then on the flip side, you got Negroes like Perm Betty, Al Sharpton, and the rest of them who really don't have no plan and agenda for African people, who basically trying to get on the right kit of the Democratic Party and Kanye on the left kit.
Exactly, with the Republican Party.
So, I mean, it just goes to show where we as a people are at, you know, because neither one of them had no interest in the growth and development of African people.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You're like a brother I heard months ago or years ago say that we're nothing more than culture capital. And when you put it into context, that's how they treat us. That's how they train us. Because from the grave to the time you die, your only purpose to the Yorugu is to serve him.
Exactly.
It's to give him all of your talent to make him what?
Yeah.
Be able to sustain himself on the planet. Unfortunately, we as a people don't realize that, so we get caught up in it. And we continuously facilitate the type of madness that we participate in. So when it's all said and done, you get Negroes like Kanye West, who people try to make seem intelligent people. But that bastard's as dumb as they come. He just has a very special talent that he's able to have used to exploit. But, I mean, is he a genius?
Well, he said he is. Jay, he said he is. He said he tested out, you know, in that particular category as a genius using, of course, if you ask me, there is no test that Europeans have to determine genius that I would say that is correct. So, you know, I reject everything that the cracker brings. So that's just me. We got another call, Jay, but just... go ahead.
If somebody was to tell you that catfish was a genius, boy, would you believe him or would you just laugh at him?
Exactly. Doing what I'm doing now. All right. 602. Good afternoon.
Yes, brother. Hey, Brother Ocean, Brother Jay.
Hey, Brother Marcus. Hey, Brother Marcus. How are you?
All right, I'm doing all right. You know, what our people don't realize is that what the solution that we are looking for, Trump or any other white folks can't give us that solution. You know, I don't know, we keep running to the white man. Oh, give me this. Oh, give me that. Look, they can't give us what we are looking for. We have to come up with solutions for ourselves. Now, if they want to give me a check, you know, you want to leave some money, fine, give me the money, no strings attached, give me my reparation check. That's what I want. You know what I'm saying?
I heard that, Mark.
But, you know, I mean, obviously the brother has some issues. He talk about mental health. He should be at the front of the line. Okay? He definitely needs help. You know, he flip flop, you know. I mean, some of his comments made sense, you see. But then he go back out, you know, so his head is he comes and goes, you know, he comes and goes. But the solution that we are looking for the people, the cracker can give it to us.
That's right.
You know, that is my little input for
thank you, Brother Marcus. 414-414. Go ahead. Good afternoon. Hey, wa alaikum assalam, dear brother. How you doing, Brother Muhammad?
Well, it's tough for the peons.
Is that right? You ain't been on in a while, man. You ain't been on. It's good to hear your voice, brother.
Likewise. We soldier on anyway. But just before I go off on Kanye, let me just say briefly, you know, Oshie, you know, we go back a long ways. You know, I was a member of the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad for 5 years, before he passed, from 70 to 75. And I wish there was a way I could intellectualize after listening to the first hour about climate change, some of his discourse, because if you look at who is the true face of man-made climate change? It's the European-American Caucasian.
Yes, yes.
You know, under his so-called science and industry, you know, creating the automobile and whatnot. Remember there was a period of time where the spray cans, if you had them in your
aerosol,
home,
right.
You had to go through a process of eliminating those because they said that they contain fluorocarbons and had an effect on the atmosphere. You know, I wouldn't follow Mr. Farrakhan around the corner, but clearly this man, if there is a devil, I agree with Paul Mooney when this young Caucasian man, you know, said to Paul Mooney, you know, I really like this stuff that you talk so much about race. You must really think that I'm the devil. Paul Mooney told me, no, but you're new to the real one this year. So people have and continue, and it just boggles the mind if you try to rationalize how did this man get in a position where he is able to call the shot and, you know, revive the steel industry. He's going to revive, you know, he comes up with a oxymoron. Clean coal. you can't barbecue your meat clean. You know, come on. So, but with respect to this young brother, Kanye West, you know, it's sad that he died at the age of 34, but Charlie Bird Parker was a genius. They said he could discuss anything, quantum physics, huge mind. Look at who this young man, and you mentioned it yesterday when we talked, that he obviously suffers greatly from not, you know, I hesitate to say this because you and I were raised by a single mom. I never met my father in his life.
And nor have I.
I never heard much about his father. But obviously, what has he done? Replace his mom, surrounded himself with a bunch of Caucasian women. To give himself the name, isn't his name, he calls himself Yeezy, isn't that kind of a play on the name Jesus, or the anglicized version of the name Jesus, I believe? But he really, you can see where his mind is, that he feels that he, you know, he's elevated himself by grabbing the behind of this Kardashian girl and swinging on their rope, and, you know, Even Bruce Jenner was stupid enough to get away from him. He couldn't compete with him. He said, y'all taking all these black men. I'm going to change myself into a woman so I can get me one. Yeah, but this young brother is lost. He is a lost young man.
Well, look, hey, Muhammad, look what happened to all the other men them women have dealt with. Look what happened to Lamar Odom, almost lost his life.
Yeah,
you know? Then the other heavyset dude, he went through a whole bunch of changes. Man.
Yeah, yeah. They certainly, I mean, when we were talking yesterday, the discussion, when I hung up, it reminded me of something that I was telling you about my experience of living here in Madison, coming from Milwaukee, and seeing these African-American brothers, these heavy melanated African-American brothers come here in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s to get the forbidden fruit. Because many of these brothers, if you live in another part of the country, or our brother, if he's still listening, who's across the water,
Brother Paul,
we call the forbidden fruit syndrome, where some African-American young men grew up and they never had contact with Caucasian women. And when they come here, they really, you know, they found some fool's gold. And then they drop a seed on, or seeds on these Caucasian women, and abandon these children either by going to jail or going back where they came from. And, man, these are some of the most confused young people you ever want to run into in your life, because they grew up, were raised by a Caucasian woman who knows nothing about raising an African-American child, and they don't fit in. They want to be what their mother is. They're not. Their father is not around for them to reflect on, and so they just dizzy. They're some of the dizziest young people, sad to say, that I've ever met in my life.
And you can see that, Brother Muhammad. You can see that as well in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. You know, that produced Prince and all the others. You know. I was in a program called Milwaukee Greater 2000 back in the late 80s, 90s.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so at one session, they were talking about, you know, racism, you know, which is a subject that I love to talk about, you know, because I feel I can talk about that with anybody on this damn planet, you know, whether you have a PhD or no D. But I was explaining that Milwaukee and Wisconsin, which is settled by Germans and Poles, are more adamant in their racism than Minnesota, which was settled by Norwegians and Swedes, hence the Vikings, the Minnesota Vikings. They're, I'm not saying that they're not, but they're a little bit, maybe more, a little more welcoming. Let's say it that way. And as a consequence, many cats started to leave parts of the Midwest, Chicago, Milwaukee, and other parts, and go to Minneapolis. You know, in fact,
too cold for me.
Yeah, way too cold for me, brother. Believe me. But my first wife, her brother, you remember Andre Broadnex?
Sure.
Yeah.
I remember Andre.
Yeah. Saxophone player. He went up there, hooked up with some bands, of course, and then he had Caucasian female and his daughter, and who I haven't talked to in quite a few years, you know, quite a few years, but very lovely young lady, you know. But that's what was happening. They were going up there and dealing with them Caucasian women, man. And that's what happened in Madison. I told you, as a firefighter, we had a state conference in Madison, and most of the brothers on the fire department are married to Caucasian women, you know. But a point that you made about them leaving, the brothers leaving, and a Caucasian woman having to deal with that child. And they really can't groom and care for that child the way his sister could. Hence, why a lot of people's young girls particularly, they had wild hair. You know?
Hey, Opie.
Yeah. Yeah, Jay.
Let me ask you this. In all seriousness, what do the Negro see in that Yoruba woman, man? What do that mutation, that mutt, that dog do to convince them to leave African women to take care of all the syphilitic pus?
Well, you know, Jay, it's all a part of when beginning in our enslavement, and the Caucasian woman put up on a pedestal, you know, and for us, it's just we wanted that. Because that's what the white man wanted. We wanted that, you know. And as a consequence, that's why many of the things that happened to us negatively were because that we looked at a white woman, we touched a white woman, we had a liaison with a white woman, you know, and that had adverse effects, not just on that individual himself, but even on our community. When you look at Rosewood, Black Wall Street, all of those happened because allegedly some brother was with a white woman.
Oh, sounds like kryptonite to me, if you ask me.
That's our kryptonite. Yeah, yeah, Muhammad.
You know, that's why one of my favorite films, I collect, you know, books, music, and films. I'm not even in recovery. I can't pass up. But one of my favorite films, and my favorite parts of the film, Jungle Fever, because that's kind of what we're talking about, when the brother asked the question, that it came to my mind, was Ossie Davis, when the character Flipper Purified brings this Italian girl to dinner at their house, and Ossie Davis gets on this roll, and it's so classic, basically, you know, disses both of them, and then Samuel Jackson, who put in a Oscar.
Yes, he did. Has the crack addict. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Award-worthy performance of the crack addict. But when he saw his brother, Flipper, Wesley Snipes, and he asked and he said, "My brother got an old fay with no Monet?" He said, "What is she?" He said, "She's a cow." He said, "Oh." He said, "You always had to do things our way." Because until I really, I mean, aside from the history of what's our brother's name that took the elephants over the Swiss Alps.
Hannibal, yeah.
And I know there was a battle with the Romans.
Right.
I never understood the hatred that Italian Americans had for us, you know, coming from the Midwest and, of course, in Milwaukee, hyper-segregated. You didn't mess with Italian girls on the east side.
That's right.
But I wasn't that anyway. But the hatred that I saw that he revealed that the Italians in New York had for African Americans, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
He told her, "I don't eat with hoburgers." That was the classic line of the movie. He said, "And I don't eat with homemongers." Hey, listen, you can look at the movie just for that scene alone and get up and walk out after that. Because, you know,
the wife of Ruby D, she said, "But you knew they was coming."
Yeah, and caught that hand like a Christian woman. That was the best part of the movie. But you know, the thing is, people like Kanye West, they get these platforms because, in all honesty, black folks allow it to happen. And then you want to get a Negro like Slick Talking Michael Eric Dyson that want to use his slick words and all of that to try and critique someone like Kanye.
Yeah, Kanye mess.
That bastard want to run to the arms of Hillary Clinton and promote her. So, I mean, they all treacherous. Because you know what it is, brother? They don't want sovereignty. They don't want liberation and freedom for African people.
No.
They just want us to be in a position to where as we don't get the whip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they want to.
That's what they do.
They're also expressing something that, in response to your question also, brother, is that it's kind of like a rejection. And I, you know, Osha knows the brother I'm talking about, who's a very prominent individual, wealthy individual in Milwaukee, Gerald Jones. His sons don't want anything that looks like their mother or their sister. Their rejection of their mother and their sister is what a lot of these brothers are expressing when they turn to these other women, these European or Caucasian women. It's like, I don't want nothing that looks like my mother. It's another aspect of self-hatred.
Yes.
But do the mother and the sister reject their black bond?
No.
They wouldn't be here without them.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. See, the mother and the sister need to reject their black behind and kick them out the family for dealing with them, Yoruba. because that's the way I handle it. Anytime I have a family member that decides he want to go out there and get him a Urugu, I let him know. I don't deal with you no more because you were traded to African people. So basically, stay away from me. And whenever I'm in a situation around him, I don't even address him.
But Jay,
I look beneath him. And you know the funny thing is, I had a situation where a cousin of mine had a white wife, and his wife had the nerve to ask me, do I think I'm better than her? I told her, you don't even fit to shine my shoes, you wiggle. And man,
but Jay, you can't help who you fall in love with.
That, yes, you can, brother. I mean, her husband, now, didn't mind you. Me and them about the same age. We knew each other growing up and everything. You know, all he could do was just look at me because he knew it wasn't going to be anything other than that. Man, his wife was so upset because after I told her that, I decided, since you want to ask this question, I'm going to believe you a little now. Man, let me tell you something. I put it on her, and her husband, you could see the look on his face. He wanted to do something, but he knew he couldn't really do anything, which just made it even worse. And his wife didn't know what to do because she couldn't dog him in front of everybody because then it wanted to prove my point. But, you know, I will say this about it. I did call the brother and apologize to him because I knew he cut hell when he got home, and I had to think about he was still kind of family-like. But I told him, and like I told you years before, I told him, you go out there and you marry that devil, and you place yourself in a position with me to get dogged. You know what I mean? And look, I had to dog him, and I had to dog her. Let me tell you something. It was the talk of the family for like a whole year and a half, man, because the family couldn't believe that I did it in front of everybody. Oh, man, I gave her a strong litmus test on how she was nothing but the scum of the earth. You know what I mean? It was beautiful. All I could say is I wish I could have recorded it or somebody had recorded it, you know, because I felt bad for him because I know he couldn't defend her, and he wasn't going to defend her. You know what I mean? And to be in that type of situation, in all truthfulness, I think I did more damage to him. That's why I had to call him than I did to her, because I know she was looking for him to defend her, and she could not tell him, you're going to let him talk to me like that? Because she knew I had told her in the beginning, your husband can't say nothing about this because he knew that he doing a disservice to African people by even being with you, devil.
Yeah. You got some Muhammad?
Yeah. Hey, brother, all I can say is, you know, and I'm glad the brother, you know, was wise enough to apologize to the brother because I'll never forget the guy told, you know, when I was, you know, he told me about the time when he told me that Senator William in Milwaukee was upset with me, and I used to go hard at the party. Then my boss told me, he told Muhammad, he said, you never want to define yourself by who you're against. He said, because if that person changes, they're not going to remember necessarily what you said, but they're going to remember how you made them feel. And so it turned my heart where I, when I come in contact with people that I feel like haven't made it to a certain level, I just say, well, for the sake of God, you know, that used to be me or that could still be me. So, you know, we need each other more than we already weak in our state as it is because we're so divided.
Right.
So we have to find ways to approach each other, you know, with a certain amount of mercy and compassion. Otherwise, we will just become more and more divided. So I'm glad that, you know, you were guided to be you know, to reach out to the brother.
Oh, no, he's family, and I understand that he's family, but, you know, she just opened up her mouth at an inappropriate time to a person that I know he told her he's not to be played with. See, and plus I was in African attire. So if you see me in African attire, I hope you don't think I'm faking the funk by dressing like this around a bunch of Negroes in suits and ties and dresses and all of that. You know my queen. She was in African attire. We representing African people. So when you come out your mouth, I don't know if you thought I was one of those type of passive Negroes that was going to let you say something to me and let it slide. I don't think she knew because I've never been around them. I don't deal with them. And whenever, you know, I have been around them, it was never any type of communication. I would walk past them and most times wouldn't speak or I would never interact with them. So this was her one time that she thought she was going to be able to show her whiteness.
Yeah.
And she got lit up. And, you know, him being family, I had to call him because I know when he went home, she gave him hell.
All right. Well, listen, man, we're about out of time. I'm going to give some Brother Muhammad.
Enjoy the weekend, and I'll speak to you on Monday.
All Oshie, right, Jay.
Oshie, make sure you listen.
Oh, yeah, tonight.
We're going to get into it about that, that Korean hair barbershop.
Man, hey, I went to the barbershop yesterday. I was telling some brothers about that, you know, and they said they doubt very seriously if that would happen in Atlanta, but anything is possible, particularly if you're talking about some Koreans going to a barber school, learning how to cut our hair, not hiring any of us, and then charging $2-$5 for a haircut when haircuts, even at that barbershop, are $10 to $15 a person. And for me, it was like $25. Actually, it was $20, but I give the brother a tip. But what I'm saying is that they'll be undercutting and not hiring us and then wearing masks and wearing masks as if we're diseased, you know, but yet still getting our money. It's a damn shame. I'll be listening to tonight, Jake, for sure.
All right, Otep.
Otep, brother. Brother Muhammad.
All right, brother.
Assalamu alaikum. Walaikum assalam. I really appreciate you, man. Thank you for giving us a call, man. And when you get a chance, when you're off again, man, let me know, man, so we can chop it up again. Okay, brother?
Most up, Oshie. Most up.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. I also want to thank my good friend, Sister Queen Ali. She's out there listening. I appreciate that. And other people are out there listening to African Perspectives. This program, we come to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. This program is dedicated and committed to help to free the African mind. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the European, the Caucasian, the Urugu, the cracker, whatever word, the oppressor, is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. That's a Dr. John Henry Clark quote. And so what we're saying on this program consistently, that's why every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, that's why the discussion is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Because there is no other way. There is no other way. Kanye West can talk all he wants about the inclusion and how Trump has to be great because if Trump is great, we are great, and also bull and all the other BS that Jesse and Al and all the other Negroes talk about in terms of the Democrats, all of that madness. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace.
Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodio, which means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodio.